Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, today is step 9? 10?
I think it's a 10th.
Okay.
I think it's a 10th. Yeah,
yeah, it's a 10th. It's 10th. That wasn't that bad. That wasn't bad.
This one's just kind of flying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We got a midpoint. We got Super Bowl Sunday. Who you got, bro? Sunday.
I think the Rams will pull it out.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're at home. And I just, you know, L.A. is one of them cities where when you kind of live in Cincinnati, it's hard to not do L.A. shit in L.A.
Yeah.
Like, if you're from Houston, if you're from Miami, if you're from New York.
Chicago.
I could dig it. You ain't really blown away by the big city.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know that these guys get to let their hair out as much.
Being in LA like that, moving around.
And it's a young team. It's a very young team. We've seen this happen on a couple of occasions where teams come out and, you know, they go a little hard early in the week. But,
yeah.
Who knows? We'll see. I do have the Rams. I think it'll be a good game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout.
I think Mary J. Blige is going to win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I'm definitely only I haven't cared about football since the pandemic.
Same.
I usually do. It's weird. I think I've said this on the show before. Over the past like decade, not even decade. Over the past like 7 years, I've become less and less of a sports fan. I can't explain it. I used to actually be a football fan. I used to actually be a basketball fan. I used to watch like regularly and go to games and shit like that. And I don't know what happened. I just kept declining.
I can tell you my theory. But oversaturation. It's not an event anymore.
Right.
I think if you what you just said almost coincides directly with Thursday night games.
Yeah.
And you know, and like just the all day.
And Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, all that shit.
Yes. So it's like all right. Day Sunday, the Monday night game, the Thursday night game. You got college football on Saturdays. It has just become a little overwhelmed. Even with basketball, for the last maybe 8 years or so, like I really start to turn up on basketball, maybe like the last 20 games.
Right.
Okay. I might start watching, you know, as playoffs.
That was me too.
Just to play out. Yeah.
Once basketball, football got in the playoffs, then I would tune in. Right. Then I would be in. And I would have, even if I wasn't going hard, I would have a pick going into the Super Bowl, all that stuff. But since the pandemic, I've just been checked out of it altogether.
Yeah. Like, and I think
the seasons are off schedule and all this stuff. Like, I just no.
And I think the divide between nerd guy and casual fan has just grown.
Yeah.
Right? So you're either talking. Yeah.
You can't log on and be like, go team without somebody coming for your head.
There's it's like, do you know what his shooting percentage is the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter on the road?
And I mean, I have a friend who's a sports reporter.
No clue.
I have a friend who's a sports reporter, and she's always like, I know you're not. She's like, I'm sorry, I know you're not a sports fan. I'm like, no, I am. I used to be. Like, I grew up, I went to an SEC school. You know what I'm saying? I grew up in football country. Of course I'm a football fan. I've always been more engaged with live games than on television. But, like, yeah, I just haven't been able to get into it. So I think on Sunday, I'm definitely interested in fucking halftime games. I think this is going to be phenomenal.
Dre and F. Gary Gray is going to be incredible.
Yo, did y'all see the trailer for the fuckers?
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. That's going to be incredible. And it's, you know, and this is the first time we've seen Kendrick in a long time.
Yeah. Also, Super Bowl games, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on here. Like, I've been to a couple of Super Bowl games. They're actually not that much fun to me.
They
go to one person. It's a lot.
Grossly grossly overrated.
So overrated.
Talks about this every year.
It's a bucket game live.
Yeah.
I so much prefer to watch them on television. Like, seriously.
Yeah, because all corporate.
The only sport that that's not true list. For is baseball. It's a bucket list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's baseball exactly a bucket games list are thing. Super fun. Yeah.
No, well, regular season football games are fun to me. The Super Bowl is well, because not.
It's all bought out by corporate. It's not actual fans in the stands. It's very because I think I said that thing to y'all. Like the ticket price, the chart was crazy. Like lower seats are like $40,000 a ticket. It's all Google, Amazon, IBM, Coca-Cola.
Very small fan section.
Even though the fan section, the nosebleeds are $6,000 a seat. It's crazy.
And you can't see the halftime show.
That too. So I mean, I got the Rams too, but I think something in my spirit is telling me to throw like $100 on the Bengals. I got a feeling like it.
When was the last time the Bengals went to a Super Bowl?
That went or won?
Went.
It's been several. It's many, many years ago. Like I'm almost maybe over 20. Even it's been a long time.
I feel like it has to be because I literally don't remember the Bengals.
You know, it's been a long time. But I don't know. Someone's just telling me Joe Burrow might pull this shit out. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I wanted to start the show by getting y'all niggas riled up. And I don't know the full story, but I saw something online where niggas was disparaging pot roast.
Oh, yeah.
And, there was a tweet where the guy said...
You seen how Sean looked up?
Yep. Sean went viral on that shit.
Where the guy said, after, you come home from working all day and somebody serves you pot roast. Like
he said, you come home from working all day or the gym and your girl serves you pot roast. I work in computers, not the Ford plant.
Yeah, I work in
some
tech.
Shit like that.
Yeah.
I work a blue-collar job.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And another dude said, if you cook pot roast, that's how I know you can't cook. This is the one I saw before I saw the other one. This dude said, if you cook pot roast, that's how I know you can't cook.
Some ladies, they was wilding.
And a crock pot. And I was like, what is wrong with y'all? And he goes, but
it's these new niggas. It's new niggas. Niggas talking about he needs steak and crab legs. Nigga, you a new nigga.
Tell me your grandmother's 43 without telling me your grandmother's 43.
Literally.
Tell me your mama told you to go put that frozen pizza in the microwave without telling me your mama told you to put that. Like, just say your mama's
kidding. We losing recipes.
Literally.
Every day.
Literally.
Because
fucking day.
Pot roast is godly.
It's amazing.
It really is top tier.
It's
Bro,
really
what you
amazing.
Got to say about this?
I just think it's ridiculous. I think these
new niggas,
sauteed spinach niggas, that put Hennessy drizzle on everything, and these IG niggas be eating lamb chops and waffles, and it's them kind of niggas, right? Because first of all, there's a lot of work. This is sneaky difficult to make proper pot roast.
Absolutely.
Like pot roast is not easy.
The margin of error is very
simple, but it's not easy. And that's what I think fools people. You feel like you gotta have me and one of my friend groups are talking about this. You gotta have crab stuffed in salmon with shrimp on top of it and a Hennessy toss with a cream sauce with some crab. Like, it doesn't have to be all, the food doesn't need to be all that. So,
pot roast is simple.
Yeah, but so pot roast is, like, these crab boils be having all kind of shit. I mean, the shrimp boils that people be advertising on IG be having all kind of shit in it that don't need to be in it, right?
Nobody
needs to be eating these boils once a week. Like, who does
don't get parents. Me started on the seafood boils because I don't want to
oh yeah, you're a Maryland nigga too. I know you be
so my folks are from South Carolina, so just understand that I did not grow up eating, like, we didn't have tacos in my
right
I didn't make tacos till I was grown and figured that was some easy shit to make. Like, we had food for, like, they cooked like that because that was just the way my parents learned how to cook, right? Like, so pot roast was something that I grew up with. Yeah. You know, like, heavy foods
and
like
that. You cook stuff that can keep.
Pinto beans, you know what I'm saying? Like,
and you cook stuff that can keep and that you can have. Again,
it was that's what I was getting ready to say. The thing about pot roast is like, you definitely, that's a 2-day meal. That's not a one-day meal unless you have, like, a massive amount of guests over. When you make pot roast, it is you staking the claim that I am not cooking tomorrow.
Any kind of roast. And there's nothing better than the next day my mama used to take. She would make us toast and then put the pot roast on top. And then you would have like a toast and pot roast situation. It's life changing, I'm telling you. But yeah, that is
like
a 2-day
meal. People
be
trying to slander meatloaf now because they never had it, and I'd be like,
"Well, you had a good meatloaf one. Sandwich. Well, you had a good one.
Godly." And then next day, the meatloaf.
We need to bring meatloaf back. We need to bring all this shit back. That's the problem.
I'm gonna make a meatloaf tomorrow.
Bring these old school. Bring these old school sit around the table meal level meals back.
See, I can cook. I can cook, but I don't. I'm not a plate. I don't worry about how it looks plated.
You're plating it.
I don't give a fuck about that.
Like, you're not eating for the gram.
Exactly.
At all.
Right.
You guys have been to my house. You seen how we eat at the barbecues.
Correct.
Like, that's, I don't
care. Put your shit on the plate and eat it. The fuck?
Put shit on the plate, bro.
Eat the food.
We're not doing all this fancy shit. And listen. God bless. If that's your hustle, God bless. But like, how you didn't have pot roast growing up that would make you want to have more pot roast growing up, you've missed out, my guy. I don't know what to tell. I have a cousin, and this is a very famous story. I haven't spoke to that nigga since 2008 because he ate the last of my pot roast.
He ate the last of pot roast.
2008.
And appropriately, you should not be speaking.
And it's 12. And like,
12 years.
Like I said, he lucky his mom was a saint because I'd have been
put some hands on his ass.
And other that thing story is everything you need to know about Sean in a nutshell.
Word. In her life.
Other thing I wanted to mention is I saw, I posted it actually. I don't know what supermarket it was, but it was oxtails and it was $75 a pack, not a pound, a pack. So it was maybe like seven of them in there.
It was like eight or ten.
But it's $75. When did this happen? I don't know. But I'm missing some shit.
They were super big. That's not uncommon. I've seen packs of oxtails, the small pack that you would normally get in a supermarket, maybe five, maybe you know, four, you know, maybe three or four big ones and like two of the little ones. Like, dude, that shit is like $25. $27. Like to make a pot of oxtail. What I'm really curious is to how Miss Shelly Ann and Mr. Errol and them ain't raised the price on a plate of oxtails yet, because where are they getting them oxtails from that they still selling for $7?
They raised them bitches.
Yeah, because them prices got to go up. Ain't no way.
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't know it because I don't cook. I don't know how to cook oxtails. So when I saw that, I was like, God damn! I didn't know.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, we might cook that maybe twice a year. Usually, like, once a year we'll make it. Like, we'll eat it out if we're at a you know, obviously at a Jamaican restaurant or something like that. Most soul food places don't really have oxtails on the menu because it's a very long process to cook. That's like a 3-hour, that's an old morning thing.
Yeah, yes, a long time thing. Let's jump right into some TV real quick. Let's do what you watching. Y'all thought I was going to forget again.
No, we didn't.
What y'all watching? So, Inka, you go first this week. What you watching?
Nothing this week. Okay. I've been too busy. Okay. So, but I did. And also, the shows that I watch weekly are being interrupted by the Olympics and the Jeopardy collegiate tournament, which is kind of pissing me off.
Harvey on the other night. That pissed me off.
Yeah, and no new Abbott Elementary, and what's the other show?
No, it was a new Abbott. It was a new Abbott.
Oh yeah, Abbott was on. I'm thinking Wonder Years.
No, Wonder Years is over. The season's over.
Wait, what?
There's 12 episodes. I think they're gonna do the mid-season thing. That was 12 episodes.
That's so annoying.
They might be doing that mid thing and start back up probably in March or something. Yeah, but this chunk of the season is over with.
I'm not, I'm actually looking for a new show. We finished like Ozark and that was cool. And Trav is finally getting into Squid Games, but I don't want to watch that again. So I'm not watching nothing. I've been parenting my ass off. So we've been watching Jules TV and seeing the ABC remix of Throat Baby, which is very interesting.
Okay. Bro, what you watching?
I just finished watching, I think it's HBO Max doc called Slow Hustle. And it's about Sean Suter, the Baltimore police detective. And they talk about how basically, in a nutshell, his death was ruled a suicide. Mm-hmm. And there are swirling questions because he was scheduled to testify with special immunity, not full immunity, to a federal grand jury about corrupt Baltimore police officers. So there has always been questions circulating around whether or not that was a hit on him and how they sort of handled the investigation. It's very, very good. It's a very good doc in that it leaves you with some, there's no closure to it. Just, you know what I'm saying? But it definitely gives you enough. Well, there's no closure to the viewer. There is a technical closure from the case. But it does give you, obviously, all of the points of views, and it's an interesting watch. It is not far fetched to believe what took place. So that was the last thing I think I watched. Everything else has been just sort of like reruns, and I tried to watch American Auto.
What is
which
that?
Is a show. It's a show on NBC. It's the creative, the person who did Superstore, a show that I actually liked, is doing this show, and it feels not just eerily similar, like it's comically similar. Like it's just the writing, the cadence, everything is sort of in the wheelhouse. It's not a great show. It'll probably linger around because usually people, you know, who've had successful shows, they'll usually give them at least two seasons or something. But, you know, it's worth taking a look at. But it definitely is not must-see TV. Like, I'm not stopping my day. It's not Abbott for me. I'm not stopping to go watch.
How do you feel about Anna Gasteyer carrying that show? Like, as the lead? Is it? I feel like she's not strong enough or something.
Yes, I was going to say, I don't think she's not the kind of person that I feel like I have to tune in to watch. Right. And that's what you know, it's kind of the way, well, not her particular, not the character, herself. I don't necessarily feel that way. And it was kind of the way I said, I felt about Power with Tommy's version.
How is it?
I didn't watch it, and I wasn't saying that in a dismissive way. I was just saying that I was never enthralled with his character enough to feel connected to, like, invest in a show. You know what I'm saying? Particularly one that was, I like period shows, so I loved the Kanan series. And, you know, I was already attached to the Ghost 2 show. This one, I mean, I'll watch it at some point. I'll probably let a few episodes pile up and then binge because that's just the easier way to watch TV for me.
Okay. Nye, what you watch?
All right, I have a quick list. Because I've been writing this week, and when I'm writing, I'm just binging like nonstop to have something in the background. So I finally caught up. I don't know if you guys have y'all talked about Southside on the show?
Yeah.
A little bit. So I finally caught up on Southside, which is
incredible. Amazing. You watched the whole season?
Both seasons.
Amazing. You finished it. Yeah, it's incredible. And I got picked up a season three.
Congratulations. I mean, incredible. I had tried to start it one other time, but I wasn't paying attention. So I was like, oh yeah, let me go back and finally get into it. Just incredible TV. The Ferris Bueller episode is like the best episode, one of the best episodes of television.
That's not the Ottoman one, is it? That's something different.
No, the Ferris Bueller episode is where they literally the girls take the day off.
With the actress girl. I loved a lot of them, but I loved all of them actually. But I thought the Ottoman one.
I thought the Ottoman one was great, just in terms of getting like backstory.
Genius how they kept like they kept having the ottoman like move around and then come full circle. It was fun. But all of them, and it was way early on the sipping paint.
They were early on the sipping paint, and I was like, "This is the show I would make with my friends." Like if me and my friends had a TV show, we made the show. So shout out to Southside. I also watched, and all of this is HBO Max, ironically. I also finally watched the movie The Eyes of Tammy Faye because it was nominated for an Oscar. Amazing. Jessica Chastain needs everything.
She nailed it.
She earned the fuck out of that Oscar nomination. You forget it's her. A matter of fact, and it got an Oscar nomination for hair and makeup, and it deserves that shit too. She apparently was in, like, because the way, you know, Tammy has had a squarish face. So Jessica has all these prosthetics plus tanner plus the lashes and the make, because you know the hair and makeup is such a big part of
tanner. The mascara, the eyeliner,
all of it. As she ages, it's more and more. Like Jessica actually says, she thinks that she's done some permanent damage to her skin just from the weight of the prosthetics and like wearing that self tanner and having that makeup on all day, and the force of having to emote through the prosthetics, right? But it's so good. And homeboy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, who plays Jim Baker. Like, they have their mannerisms down perfectly. And even though I'm old enough to kind of remember PTL and the scandal in real time, there's a lot more to Tammy than I knew.
I remember in college, like, I remember, like, we, you know, college is like getting high and out. And I remember like that shit just come on Sunday nights. And I remember one night we was just in the dorm and we was just flicking and we were like, well, what is this? Right. And the faces and all that shit and the manner was like you said was like, and we were just every Sunday it became appointment TV to watch that shit and laugh our asses off at the crazy mannerisms and the gear and the Tammy crying and the fucking songs. And that shit wasn't, younger kids go on YouTube and like it's, and watch that shit because it's actually crazy.
And it doesn't bring her all the way up to like her second life with like the remarriage and the and like when she gets the reality, when she starts going on the reality circuit and stuff like that. It stops a little bit after it stops around the time she divorces Jim.
Okay.
So they right before she gets remarried. But really, really well done. So there's that. Then I caught up on Righteous Gemstones. But do y'all watch Righteous Gemstones?
I haven't watched it yet, but I hear it's good.
Right, I've only seen like a couple of episodes. It's hilarious. So
the first season was hilariously funny. This season is like, it went from good to fucking great. Like, it's like absurdist succession. Like, it walks such a great line between being ridiculous and hilarious and actually like being real heavy drama. It's perfect. And Sunday's episode was a doozy, so I'm caught up on that. I mean, excellent, 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 excellent. And then John Goodman is John Goodmaning this year. This season. And then lastly, for HBO Max, I've been watching The Gilded Age, which is by the creators of Downton Abbey, but it's about New York during Reconstruction, like when it's the old money changing into the new money. So the Astors and stuff kind of having to make way for like the railroad tycoons and all of that. And like that delicate game of like old guard, new guard. But there's also like this really great underlying Black storyline about a Black family who's, you know, themselves like middle class Black people, clearly of some means. The girl went to school in Philadelphia, like she's educated and very literate and well dressed. And I found out that they have a historian from Rutgers, I gotta find her name, I will before we got the show, who's consulting on the show to make sure they get that part right and like keep an actual real storyline about Black people in that time instead of just being about the white people. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's interesting. And then on the lighter side, for those of y'all who like CW type white people drama, Sweet Magnolias is back for season 2, which has Heather Headley.
That's on my list. I love that.
Yeah, which
show
has Heather Headley and the girl who's not Issa Fisher, but looks like Issa Fisher, one of them redhead girls, and a couple of other people. It's set in Coastal Carolina. I probably talked about it after season 1. it started for me last year as like, oh, there's nothing else on TV. Let me watch this. This is kind of cheesy, Lifetime-y. And by the end of the joint, I was sucked all the way in. I watched that shit like straight through. So for those of y'all who like, and the guy who did it, he also was the producer, director, Gossip Girl, some other CW stuff. So it has like that CW feel. Mm. Jamie Lynn Spears is in it. Chris Klein is in it. So yeah, that's back. And now I'm watching Married at First Sight because this season is ridiculous. So those are my shows.
I'm watching real quick. I've seen a couple of things. I think I mentioned last week, I'm watching Ladies Who List. I really like that show. It's a really, I just think it's a very good, well done reality show with like the characters with the people are interesting. One of the women quit already. She's obviously finished. They take this season, but she's not coming back. She says, although I think she is going to come back. I think she was a cry for attention because I get the vibe that she thought the show was going to be like her. Her name is Kiana. I think she was going to be like Kiana and them. And whereas it hasn't been that. And actually one of the women who I think they thought they were going to, I know they thought was going to be like a punching bag on the show, has become the breakout star of the show. And it's driving them crazy that this woman they thought was kind of like a throw-in is like the main one. Now her name is Robin.
Is this the show with the black woman named something racist? She got some kind of racist name.
That's Selling Tampa, and the character, okay. The person's name is Colony.
It's what?
Colony.
Colony, that's what it was. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's a different one. But so I'm really enjoying that. There's a show on HBO Max called Somebody Somewhere that comes on after Euphoria, which is really interesting show. It's comedy, dark comedy drama about this woman who's from Kansas, who like the person's really from Kansas, and she goes back home and kind of like the characters in her little town of Manhattan, Kansas, which is where University of Kansas is, I believe, and or Kansas State, one of the universities is there.
This is with the heavyset white girl.
Yes, it's actually good. It's actually very good. A very good
I want to check it out.
Yeah, it's very good. It's kind of quirky, very quirky, but it's really good. And the last thing I watched the show called Sky Ladder on Netflix, which is about this Chinese artist who does art through fireworks. And he built this ladder, like this was like 600 meters or something like that, which is
almost, the ladder to heaven or whatever.
Yeah, the ladder to heaven. Yeah, and it's about him building that. And but of course, it gets to his background with his family, and you know how he became an artist. His father was an artist, and they came up under. He grew up under, the communist reign with Mao Zedong and all that. So they kind of get into some other things, but this is very, very interesting. He's dope. He literally makes fireworks art. He literally knows how to make fireworks, like do things that you haven't seen before. So I watched that. That was good too. You want to talk about Euphoria real quick, Inka? Did you watch it online?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You told me.
Oh, sorry. We talked about it. So yeah.
The only thing I have to say about this last episode is like just print the Emmy right now for
just engrave that Zendaya, bitch. Sit it aside
for the mom. I forget the actor's name.
For Gia, for Stormy.
For Gia.
Yeah. For cinematography, for editing, for writing, all that shit.
Direction.
All that.
Story, and for everything. What's the girl's name? Rue's girlfriend?
Oh Jules.
The girl who plays Jules?
Jules.
I can't remember her name. Everybody.
It has to take, acting is not for me, because if Zendaya is in my face, so close, that she's spitting on me,
right?
I might have to whoop your ass. You're playing an addict. We're at that place in Rue's addiction where she is becoming another version of herself. She is in
she has to be
mean, horrific.
She's destroying everything around her, but she's like, I'm destroying, I'm going down, and I'm literally tearing everything around
tearing me. Tearing it all down.
And she, yeah.
The toll that must take on her has got to be
incredible. Well, that's what I was going to say. I have to imagine she was in therapy during shooting. I don't think she's ever said it, but I always watch the after show. Mm-hmm. But I just have to imagine like she's going so far with this. And it's so convincing, like holy shit. Like, I have to imagine, because I know the girls who play Cassie and Maddie said that after every take, they have to like hug it out and check on each other and make sure they're good, because they'd be going
so intense. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have to imagine, like, there has to be some outlet that Zendaya has, because, like, oh shit, like this episode.
Yeah.
I was breaking down the door.
I woke up the next day and there was still something like unsettled, and I couldn't figure out what was bothering me. And I was like, I was worried about Rue. Like, it was Rue. Like, I woke up still like, Jesus, we need to lift that girl up in prayer. But also, this is a little lighter, but that whole episode, I said that it was like an alternate universe version of Kid trying to get home from Play's house and running from the cops. Oh,
just running through stuff.
Just
running through backyards, cutting through a party. Mm-hmm. And like, it was really like
she went through a whole quinceañera.
She jumped off a building in Chucks, bro.
Like, word. And dope sick and all that shit. Like,
when she went to the lady's house, that was like the most intense scene.
With Lori?
That scene.
I was shocked they didn't tie her down. Like, they didn't put something to hold her on the bed. I was surprised she was able to get up. It's clear what Lori was doing. Like, Lori with that monotone, dead voice, and, you know, but, you know, and Kelly, friend of the show, KMJ, she pointed out some shit. That when
Rue woke up with more tracks than she had.
Yeah, that. And when Rue came into the house, Lori said Ruby Bennett, which was, we found out that's
her whole name.
But that shows that she did some research on her.
Yeah.
Find out that was her name, and which means that she knows where she probably lives, and she's like, because nobody ever called Ruby in the whole show.
Yeah, we never heard her call that.
Again, print the Emmy. You know, intense from the word. It was just so intense from the word go. It was just so, and it never really stopped. And it was even like some comedic shit in there, but like,
yo, the way Rue put Cassie on blast to distract everybody.
Oh my god! Everybody's mouth dropped. Like, when she said that shit, I was like, oh. And they're already doing memes of Maddie. I'm about to get fucking violent.
Right.
I love that Maddie was like, hold on. When was this? Like, fully recognizing in the moment that, like, Rue has no reason to lie about this secondary situation.
Right.
She is telling me the truth. So, like, let's get on.
And also, Cassie was so caught off guard because she had no idea Rue knew, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like, but what was killing me is that people on Twitter were like, you know, Rue doesn't have anybody who cares about her around her and all sorts of shit. And I was like, first of all, Rue literally pulled out a projector and a whiteboard and a pointer to show us how she's about to manipulate everything and blow up everything as an addict. Like, this is intentional. Secondly, it's two adults in her whole fucking life. She already has pissed off her sponsor.
He's gone.
She can't go back to Ali until she's sober and working her steps. If then. And then also, like, of course, because everybody was pointing out, like, Maddie not focusing on Rue. I was like, y'all also got to remember, and I love how involved we all get in these worlds, but y'all also got to remember, like, there are plot devices. Like, that was by design. That was the most dramatic way that Nate news could come out. Of course, that was the way they did it. Like, sometimes you have to remember that the show creators are putting things in certain places for
us to move the story along.
More into it. Yeah, because this girl was having this conversation with me, like, well, I mean, if they were going to insert themselves in Rue's recovery, I think they should have been more invested. I was like, they're 17. What are you talking about? Like, what the fuck?
Exactly. They don't. I don't think any of them realize how far gone Rue is.
Of course not. And also, Maddie is on her own. Maddie is, you know, self-absorbed. Cassie's having a fucking mental breakdown. Maddie's in a deep. Kat is in a deep depression.
What's going on?
Cassie's sisters, Lexi.
She's writing a play.
Lexi
writing the goddamn drama.
How I thought a lot of shit was going to come out. I thought they were all going to go to the play and then see shit. But then they probably still might go and see.
I think that's going to happen.
But it's, I mean, again, at this point, if you're not watching Euphoria, you're missing some phenomenal.
I mean, it's a lot, though. I'm not going to front. It's,
no,
like,
it's a lot. It's a lot.
It ain't
it's
no light now. Sunday shit now.
Yeah. It ain't no Seinfeld.
It ain't no light Sunday fucking, shit.
Yeah. It ain't
I,
no,
I needed
it
a drink.
Yeah, not Seinfeld. The show makes you use drugs after.
That's what I, like,
but that's what
that.
They did.
That
was genius. On this last episode.
I need Sam Levinson to consider the intent because I needed a drink or a smoke. After that,
but again, that was the point of this last episode. It made you feel like you were a junkie. Like, they literally put you in the junkie's eyes and space and seeing and hearing what she hears and moving how she moved. They literally made you feel like that, which is why, like you said, at the end, it was such a like, what the fuck did I just watch? Because it was so intense. Right. But that's a junkie's life.
Right.
And Rue now, especially after Lori with the morphine. She's a full blown.
She's
junkie.
Done. She's junkie. Done.
Yeah. So it's great. Done.
And this episode was enough for me to be like, I pray I never in my life have to go through something that Rue's mom is going through, because I would be at the point where I'll be like, you know what? In my mind, I'm like, she. I gotta give her to Jesus now. It's above me now. Like, because what can you do?
I totally
Rue is
get.
Determined to die. She's determined. Mm-hmm. To fucking die. She's running through traffic. She's dodging people.
She ran through traffic on this episode twice.
Yeah.
She made the decision to take a suitcase of
$10,000
from extremely dangerous people, the same people that made them strip naked a couple episodes before.
With no plans on selling it.
Yeah, no, she was just like, I'm just going to work through the shit. Like, my girl was taking fentanyl every fucking day. Like, what are you talking about?
What are you doing?
And she had what she wanted. She had jewels. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there was no actual reason. So it's not like triggered by any. Even she said it's not really about her dad. She said it a while ago. She was like, I know people want to make it about my dad. It's not really about my dad. I miss him, but I would still be an addict. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'd so never want to be in that situation, because I would be like, girl, we're going to thought some prayers.
Speaking of that, I had an interesting experience. So I got my booster shot last week. At the CVS, the local CVS, and I'm waiting in to go to the pharmacy counter for my appointment, and I hear this like behind me, like literally like right behind me, I hear this like turned around, and it was this junkie, and he said, I don't give a fuck, I'm dope sick, I don't give a fuck, and he was yanking out, because now when all the CVS is in New York anyway, and the Rite Aids or whatever, that everything's locked up. Before it used to be kind of like, now it like the toothpaste is locked up.
Yeah.
Everything's locked up because the junkie shit is out of hand, like we've said on the show several times, and they steal. So he was yanking out dish detergent. He was going to his ham on like some Tide, and he yanked the thing off, and it had the Tide, the wire was still holding the three Tides, and he just yanked it, and he was like, I don't give a fuck, I'm dope sick, you better get the fuck out of my way. But I've also noticed that, and I saw a report on this in San Francisco, it's like this too, where now people are walking into drugstores, they're stealing, and the security guard does nothing.
Cause it's loss prevention. It's like they're actually not supposed to do anything.
In Frisco, I know there's a couple Walgreens in Frisco and downtown Frisco, like Market Street area, that literally just closed down because they were wiped out because junkies would just walk in. This footage on YouTube, you can watch it. Junkies just walk in and grab shit, put it in the cart, and just they're not even running.
they just
walk out, and the security guard standing right there, and he just watches them walk out. And the security guard came up to this guy. While he was wilding and just watched him. Like, he was like, all right, man, go ahead. And, your man's wilding. He just walked out the store. It was crazy. What are you going to say, bro?
Well, I was going to say they need to be going down stealing them $75 pack oxtails. I'll give you $40 for that real quick.
For two packs? I'll give you 40 for two. Come on now. You know you want it.
We need the man selling meat out the back of the trunk again, man. Where he go?
Yeah, where's that? Is the watermelon man still around? Does that still happen?
Nah.
That don't happen. And the fish man, does the fish man happen anymore?
I don't see the crab man still happens. That shit anymore.
There's a little truck on 180th and St. Nick. These dudes be selling caviar. They be really? I don't. Yeah, right on the corner, 180th and St. Nick. There's a truck every day. They're right on the corner. They sell fish and all that stuff. But they be selling like high end shit, like caviar, and they got the little dry ice machine in the back of the truck. But the watermelon man and the fish man, the porgy man. I didn't see
the watermelon man. I didn't see any of the fresh fruit people this summer. I remember. The fruit stands, but not the fruit carts.
Yeah, we see the stands. Yeah, but we don't see the watermelon man. Used to be a watermelon man on 140th and like 7th.
But they also used to be like a cantaloupe. The people with the oranges. That were already half peeled and some pot, like you see all of that. Yeah,
we're losing recipes, man. Jesus,
we are. Yikes.
I want to get into real quick. I don't know if you saw this, but Frontier Airlines and Spirit Airlines have merged,
Like the jokes right there. Motherfucking jokes.
You can't even. It's about to be so lit. If Uncle Joe and Kamala fuck around and do another stimulus, Tulum is going to be packed like Miami. And they're going to be flying on that.
The cartel is shooting up motherfuckers in Tulum. They can go if they want to. It's the Wild West down there.
Right wow. Now. Listen, you thought Spirit was a horrible airline. Frontier completely knocked them out of the water. I don't know what they're going to do with these planes. It's worse than every airline I've ever been on. It is absolutely horrendous.
And now they merged.
And now
they merged. They might just call it nigga airline or IG model airline. IG model airline. That's what it is. It should call it Sneaky Link. Sneaky Link Airline.
Because
that's how they fly them IG models out on them cheap ass planes. They go, I can fly you out.
If there comes a day where y'all hear me say I'm flying fucking Spirit here, y'all need to check on me. Y'all need to ask me what's going on. Y'all need to call mama. Y'all need to call my mama and be like, I'm concerned about Naima because she on Spirit here.
Say what you want. I have never had a bad experience on Spirit. Ever.
Okay.
I have had a horrible experience on
the Frontier.
American Airlines, United.
Oh, I hate American
Frontier
so
for sure. Allegiant. All these other places. Spirit, I've never done me wrong. Never
I don't like American. I used to like American back in the day, but I'm Delta
If you don't have status on American, it's a horrible experience. Yeah. It's a hard. That's me too. So that's my thing. I'm really, really even more so now, particular about what I fly and how. And like, I will go through all kind of shit to make sure I can fly Delta. Like,
Delta, I ain't going. Right. I'll wait it out. I don't know if it definitely ain't no piece two, but I just, I'm not gonna call it Kanye Kim because Kim is low. This Kanye.
He's trying to be anyway.
Fuck That Nigga segment? Because it's absolutely Kanye West.
There you go. It's definitely Kanye West. And of course, now he's using the Fuck That Nigga methods, because now he's like on some like pro-black shit, and they're trying to keep a black man from his kids.
Trying to destroy the black family, and I'm trying to celebrate black fatherhood.
I'm a black father trying to be in my children's lives. Nigga, shut up.
Get out of here. It was all good a week ago, though, when
you bought the house across the street because you're an abusive asshole, not because you want to see them kids.
Literally.
And also, like, I know, and he's talking about having to reach through shit to hug his kids. Like, today, like, one of his posts was complaining that he wanted to bring the kids to Chicago to watch a basketball game play. And he's like, and she won't let me. Then what's joint custody? Joint custody is not you flying my kids to Chicago. That's not what that means.
The four kids under 10, they're small kids.
You and Noah and Kanye, he wants to take them probably on a random Thursday. Shit, them niggas is in school. The fuck? Like, the one thing I noted, Kim put out a statement last week, I guess, because Kanye was talking about North on TikTok. And the thing that stood out to me more than anything else was her saying, I wish Kanye would communicate through his third lawyer that he has now. Like, she's trying to keep the communication through the attorneys. And I'm sure that his lawyers, either he keeps firing them because they won't do some dumb shit he wants them to do, or they keep quitting because he's a horrible client. Like, if my client were doing this all day, I would have been like, nigga, you're going to have a restraining order. You're not going to stick this all day.
It ain't worth the bread.
I'm not doing it. Because Kanye doesn't even realize, like, the public opinion, some may be on your side with these shenanigans, my nigga, but a judge is not going to find this shit cute at all.
I mean, this is my theory. One of my many theories on this shit. I think that he thought they were going to have a nigga divorce, which is, you don't really get divorced legally, but you guys are separate because you still kind of link up sometimes. Maybe because he still got access to coming in the house, and I don't want that nigga around my kids and all that shit. I really think he thought it was going to be that, like he'd be able to kind of pop in and out without, you know, and Kim just kind of like going with the flow. And because the nigga divorce really is about control.
I think he didn't care until she was publicly with somebody else.
Yeah, that's true. I was getting to that too. Then when she got with somebody else publicly, and you never know, but seems to be happy. You know, seems to be happy so far with Pete, and they low and stuff like that. They're actually almost very low,
which I think actually irritates him even more, right? Because that's what it is. Like the fact
she's not giving him no energy.
She's not giving him no energy. She doesn't talk to him directly. Because you saw he posted something where he hit somebody like, "Give me Kim, send me Kim's number." So this is all about control. She doesn't talk to him directly. She's clearly going through attorneys only, right? And the fact that there's another man in her life and Kanye can't Bogart this shit is what is pissing him off. And this is what happens when a narcissist can't get their way and can't get any energy from you either. Because it's not even like she's taking shots back at him. Or like clapping back at him or like up in his face or anything like that. But it's also like the fucking hypocrisy of you and your new chick front paging it all day, every day. You buy her whole crew Birkins and shit. You know what I'm saying? She's doing 82,000 interviews. Y'all been together a month. It's like, it's insane. But you complain about Kim all day, every day, right?
Who's low?
Who's low? Who's like on the cover of Vogue right now and not worry about your ass? So I think that it's a control thing because that's what the fuck Kanye does. And I mean, he's done it with every chick. And you know, I think that what's unique for him is that any other time he's moved on for a relationship, he's had the upper hand. It's kind of like Future and Sierra. Like he's had the upper hand. He's had more money. He's had more fame. He's had more, so like Alexis faded into kind of like whatever. Amber still stayed around, but as soon as she started dating Wiz, he was talking shit about Amber, you know.
Yeah.
So, but with Kim, like, can't really.
She don't need him for nothing.
She needs him for nothing. Can you imagine if Kim had his kids and was relying on him for money right now? This would be a disaster.
But it's been interesting. The one interesting thing I noticed, some people online, I see, it doesn't matter because the niggas online are idiots, but like, they'd be like, yeah, you know, now, you know, he made her hot. I'm like, he didn't make her. What are you talking about? Love her or hate her. That's not the conversation. The conversation is she was a very popular public figure, which is why he got with her, because she was
exactly hot. Because he thought they could be a power couple.
Exactly. And then the last thing I think is, like, you know, as a person who's been through a divorce before, like, that shit is really kind of coming down on him.
Yeah.
He's like, yo, I don't really like these girls that I'm with. There's, you know, certain things that you do in a marriage, and, you know, there's certain intimacies that you have. And I'm not talking about sexually. I'm just talking about, you know, opening up yourself.
Somebody who knows you.
He ain't going to get that with Julia Fox. So he's like...
Definitely not with Julia Fox, because she's all about that flash. She's only here for the attention. That's it.
Yeah. I'm only here so I don't get fined. So, like, it's really coming down on him. I'm like, yo, like, I'm really, like, single now. I'm a 44-year-old nigga in the club. What the fuck happened?
Literally.
You know, I'm not seeing my kids in the morning, waking up, having cereal or whatever their routine
was. But he wasn't seeing the kids in the morning when he was married. That's the fuck shit. I know.
Yeah, he was in Wyoming. But I think that's also, like, which is why he posted, God, bring our family back and all that. Because I think he'd be waking up some mornings like, what the fuck happened, you know?
Right.
What do you think, bro? You got anything for this?
I don't have nothing. Fuck them niggas. They be all right. But God bless the kids. You know, Uncle Sean love the children. And, you know, we don't want to see them being scarred on either side of this. But at some point, they will no longer be 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds. Right. And they're going to be able to look back at this shit.
And they'll remember this shit.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, at some point, this is kind of, these are the formative years in your relationships with your parents, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, we've said enough about him. I muted his name on my Twitter, so I get as little of that engagement as possible. But what are we doing here? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I just, what are we doing? Peace to Azalea Banks for saying everything that I wanted to say.
She brought it home.
Yeah. That nigga is abusive. Like, we saying all this stuff about, you know, mental illness and, you
know, I'm not buying that.
The black this, the white this, the MAGA this. It's not about any of that. He is abusive. He wants agency over everyone in that family.
He have no mental illness. He ain't have a shred or any breakdown of mental illness when motherfucking Jay Prince said, come do this show for Larry Hoover. He was attention. He was there.
Nigga was clear-minded.
Nigga was clear-minded.
Got the quiet together.
When Jay Prince put the finger guns in the picture, nigga, he had no issues about nothing.
Yeah.
So tone was even all that shit.
Yeah.
Tone, nigga, everything, right? His tone was even. He had no bass in his voice. None of that. And this is partly because he is just not often challenged. And I think that as men, a lot of times we are, it is easier for us to not challenge each other in saying that, yo, man, like, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, you bugging,
like,
nigga.
Like, and I say this, and I say this as I include myself. You know, there are people that I care about, people that I'm friends with, that I think those people in that sort of really tight circle, we tend to check because we have a an even relationship. And I think when you don't have an even friendship, an even relationship, when you are in the employ of someone, when you are sort of beholden to their movements and their whims, as a way to put food on your table, it really impacts your ability to be as honest as you can as a man.
Absolutely.
Because there is no rational way that even the most irrational people that he has around him do not behave this way with their children, or at least in public. And that this is just beyond, this is beyond the scope of being ridiculous at this point.
And this is also what happens when you hire, like, to your point, when you hire your friends. So now they're your friends, but they also are eating off of you and, you know, paying a mortgage and got kids in private school and whatever else they got, paying their credit cards and helping out their mom or whatever else is happening.
And so you lose objectivity.
How well can I keep it with this nigga? Because if he gets mad at me, he's going to banish me to the cornfield.
He's
done that. Because he's done that. He did that with John Monopoly.
Yeah.
You know, and I think him and Don Q, and I think him and Don
Q. I think Don left. I
suspect Don left. I'm talking shit because it probably got to that point. Like, nigga, I've known you since fourth grade, nigga. What the fuck?
What are you doing?
And they probably clashed. I'm assuming, you know. So, yeah, that's the tricky thing about hiring your friends. Like, get it, you're making all this money, you want to put everybody on, but like Sean said, the objectivity gets a little murky because, you know, people don't want to get thrown away.
I know I said I wasn't going to say nothing, but and furthermore, nigga, you didn't have this sort. This was not your everyday life. This was not your everyday existence. Stop telling, like, if this was the experience that you had where your mom and dad were kind of going at it neck and neck like that, and there was this very contentious environment that you grew up in. No, nigga, when it was very convenient for you, you painted the portrait as your parents being sort of not together, but they were clearly not you know, adversarial in any sort of way, that you spent time with your dad, that you knew who your dad was and all of that sort of stuff. And now you're making it seem like you came from a broken home and your motherfucking mom was like not ever letting you know who your dad was. Like you wandered the streets aimlessly looking for.
Yeah, that narrative is like, new as fuck. That narrative is super new.
And shame on you for using your mother's legacy in that way. For using it for what's convenient for you, for naming your albums after this woman and using those albums to talk about the woman you're supposed to love and the mother of your children. Shame on you for being a dick in that way.
So let's move on. I want to mention one little show which leads into the biggest show. So there's a couple shows on Netflix now. One is called The Puppet Master, and the bigger one, the much bigger one, is called Tinder Swindler. The Tinder Swindler. And these shows are very interesting to me because both of them are based in con men. Like people, they're different cons. One is more of a low-level con and one is super high-level con. But it's just interesting to watch these con men attach themselves to people and tear these people's lives apart. And the people, even now, some of them feel like they're like still not fully clear on what happened. Like, I still feel like what the con man did to them, the relationships they have with the con man, rather, were based in real reality, like not a con. So the Puppet Master, real quick, is about this guy who claims he's an M15 agent, which is basically like a spy agent.
He was a secret agent. I mean, actually, and the one thing I will add to what you said is that the Puppet Master is actually, it's a longer con. It's a longer con, and it's a much more, it's like, that was really almost like taking someone hostage and brainwashing them, whereas the
Tinder
was really just like a scheme, right? Mm-hmm. That shit was like, that dude was getting targets, isolating. It was like some Dirty John shit, like isolating them from their families,
taking all their money.
Targets who had money, having them turn over ID, bank accounts, you know, all of that shit, and like really kind of indoctrinating them into like his thinking and completely like keeping them under his control, which was very scary.
It was very scary.
Yeah. And, you know, the one story that stuck with me was that, it actually at first was hard for me to follow. I had to rewind because I thought they were talking about, it was hard for me to delineate. They were switching back and forth between subjects, between women. I was trying to keep track of which woman they were talking about at which point. But one of them, she had an inheritance from her parents.
Yeah.
And he made her call her parents nonstop all day, every day, asking for the money.
Until the mother.
Yeah, the father was like, I don't give a fuck. The mother was like, fuck it.
I'm tired of calling the house, like Nia said, like literally all hang day,
up,
every day.
Call back. They would hang up on her, call back, not answering. Yep. He's like, even if we don't answer the phone's still ringing, you know, like
all day and night. I think the last hit they got was 450 pounds.
Yeah.
Which is 450,000 pounds, excuse me.
Right.
Which is like a lot of money. It's probably 600 grand or so.
But they were like, take this and don't ever. Yeah. Call us again.
The Puppet Master was very dark and heavy. Tinder Swindler, which is the more popular of the two, is not that it's not dark, but it's obviously more flashy because this guy was conning to go to Mykonos and Paris and London. Right,
that was what was
Amsterdam.
Killing
him. And he was wearing the fly shit, and he was like, you know, and obviously it's based on Tinder, which is such a current popular app. So, you know,
they estimated that he stole $10,000. I mean, $10 million.
Pounds.
10 million pounds, which is even more, right? But like, all he was using it for was the floss. Like, all you're using it for is jets, airlines, hotels, meals. That's what would piss me off, is the fact that you're not even like, nigga, at least have a real estate scheme going or some shit. Like, do something with my shit. Like,
nothing to show for it. Nothing.
And I was also like, what the fuck kind of credit system does the UK have? Like, these bitches was getting
that's what I
could do. $450,000 in credit in a month. What is that?
White is the credit.
You're absolutely right. And that is also why I didn't even finish it, because I was looking in myself for some sort of sympathy for these people.
Zero.
And I find it.
Multiple credit cards in a month and then taking out loans on top of that.
And that's the thing with me, right? I get that he set it up where, because he was basically running a Ponzi scheme. Like, he would use one chick's money to set up the next chick. So she would see him in a 5-star pimp suite. He'd take her on a jet first date. He's spending all kinds of money.
Have the Rolls Royce.
Right, and he's got a staff with him. So there's a security person. There's a driver. So it all looks really real, right? And he spends a month spending money and letting you see him spend money so that you feel like, okay, he's got it. So I was like, all right, so maybe I might've been like, yeah, I'm gonna add you can use my Amex for like a week, right? But as soon as the nigga called me, like, I need 25,000 pounds.
On top of maxing out your Amex.
I would have been like, after you done had me call Amex 3 times a day for a fucking week on your hotel charges, I would have been like, fam, I can't help you. Cause let me tell you what I'm not doing. If I don't have $25,000 cash. I'm like, yeah, aren't you the son of a diamond fucking magnet? Like,
why you call your father? Y'all
ain't got a security team or some shit? Like, why are you calling me?
Nigga, call your father or your uncle.
Who the fuck are you calling me for? My enemies. What? They get a corporate card.
That nigga photoshopped himself into that picture.
Yo.
Which is when I turned it off.
Crazy.
He was using pictures for every fucking thing.
Yo, when old girl sent her passport, I was like, what are you doing, B? You
ain't that much love in the goddamn... But see, this might be...
She sent the pay
because I'm not even going to say that black people can't get schemed, because it happens to black people too, right? But the thing with me is that I am always... And I think this is partially a music industry thing. Anytime a nigga tell me what they just had or what they about to get, I'm not trying to hear it. Like, do you have it right now? Do I see it right now? Anytime somebody's like, yo, I just had X number of dollars. I just had that car. I don't have it now. I'm about to get, this is about to happen. I'm about to sign. I just signed. I'm about to, no, that's always a scam. So as soon as you were like, okay, you already done put tens of thousands of dollars on my Amex. First of all, let's cut that off right now. That's a wrap, because I have to pay that bill in 30 days. Where's my money? Secondly, you want me to go get more money?
More. And they were doing it. He told one girl, yo, sell your car and send me the cash.
Crack. Like, it's crack. And the last girl was the one, and the second girl I kind of get, because she was his friend. They'd have been gallivanting around all summer on his dime before, so I'm sure she really thought that shit was real. But like, as soon as
on the first girl's dime.
Right, on the first girl's dime. But as soon as you're calling me, stressing me out, like, every day, like, more money.
Multiple times a day.
Fam, absolutely the fuck not. Absolutely not.
But also, absolutely. I think what this showed is the, not only the arrogance of, we know about the arrogance of the white man, right? But this is also the arrogance of the white woman. Because these women, first of all, The fact that this guy's supposed to be a billionaire and he's on Tinder swiping is ridiculous, because he wouldn't need Tinder to bag.
He would not be on Tinder.
Not at all. But number two, these white women thought they deserved that life.
Well, because white women are taught to buy into the fairy tale shit, right? Like, a prince sweeps in and does all these things. Like, literally, that's why they're obsessed with
private Kate jet on the first
date. Diana on the all first date. Like, you're imagining there's some man who's going to ride in on the white horse. Yeah,
like The Bachelor and all that other bullshit.
And
black women know that doesn't exist.
Yeah, first of all, there's not, I don't know how many black women, especially who were raised in the air quotes black culture, would have went on a jet with some nigga they just met the first night they went out.
Well, okay, but wait. A lot of
white really would have been a girlfriend.
Wait, Jeffrey. Think about how many things black women do with rappers and entertainers and athletes when they first meet them. Let's not get it fucked up.
Go ahead, Sean. Wait, Sean, go ahead. Important details on our very first date for Will Call. So I can't really speak to this.
Go ahead, Sean. Sorry.
I'm just going to say, yes, I clearly that does happen. It is usually with a hint of, I know this nigga's kind of bullshitting me. It's usually done slightly tongue-in-cheek, and it's never to this extent. It's usually to the extent right. of some shit I can afford to lose, right? Like, nigga got me for 5 G's, but you know what? I had a fucking world
in Mexico time.
That weekend. You know what I'm saying? So there's some... There's
a
some
nigga just ran your credit up, the co-sign on the car he ain't paid for.
Yeah, and what's wild is thing, that's what yeah. I found interesting. I didn't watch this, but what I found interesting was that there was no, there were no assets. There was, like, usually that happens with something. There was a possession somewhere. Right. There is a, like you said, there is a house. There is a car. There is a piece of jewelry. There is something tangible that you could send your cousins to go get.
Well, no, no, I'm going to tell you, she didn't watch. So he, one, the one girl, he was begging for bread. And he said, yo, I got all these watches. I'm fly you to, I think, Amsterdam, and I'm going to give you my AP.
Right.
So he flew her to Amsterdam. He gave her the AP.
And
of course, it was fake.
Of course. Because this is what happens. This is what happens when you shelter your children. Because guess what? Because guess what? Jordan is going to ask for. Where's the right. box and papers, my nigga?
Correct.
And where's the wire transfer? As to where that's coming from. And you will get this after this is verified when I take it in for service right. at AP.
And exactly. the one, like, and that's what happened with the one chick. After she had been waiting on the wire, after she owed 7 different creditors money, he was like, come meet me in fucking Portugal and I'll give you a check. Nigga, you want me to fly you to give me a check? You better give me certified funds, wire. You
better wire some
transfer,
shit.
Some shit.
Nah, I don't even, matter of fact, don't wire me nothing. I don't want you knowing nothing about nothing. I'm coming, have my shit in the duffel bag, okay?
Right.
And you get it to me in cash.
Meet me at the airport and I'm out.
He had her bring him cash. He had these broads bring him cash. I would have been like, bring me cash.
That is fact. What I found fascinating just from hearing the stories is just the ease and the access in which they were able to get this. Yeah. And also that they did not, but this is also about predatory behavior, right? Like, clearly, these are not people that they have great relationships with those family members.
Right.
Because, you know, you're isolated. The reason that doesn't often happen is because at some point you mention that shit in a room full of black women or at the
beauty salon. And they're like, what are you talking about? Shit, yeah.
And they fry your ass. And they fry you mercilessly.
Pull your ass up. Absolutely.
And they're going to give you a story, a mm-hmm. very intimate story about some shit that they did.
Yeah.
And they're going to talk you off that ledge.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I will say about a black woman, what wouldn't have happened, because again, I'm not going front, like, we don't have stories of black women who got niggas in the house, paying for everything, taking care of everything. Listen, I've been guilty of having a boyfriend try to put a car in my name, and I was actually going to let him, but my credit was trash too. So it was like, joke was on him. It was like, you can run it if you want to. It's not going to work. But it's like, and that was a long time ago. I would never do that shit now. But the difference is, at least the nigga's there. Like, he's actively draining her, but at least he's there. What will never happen is a woman who don't never see this dude, and he's like, I'm this place, I'm this place, I'm this other place, but I'm asking you to come out of your pocket hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's not likely to happen. I'm not going to say that women haven't gotten hit once or twice with, like, a Nigerian print scam or a give me a Home Depot gift card scam or a... It can definitely happen periodically, but like young, attractive, vibrant women, which these women all were, mm-hmm. like, it got like that.
Absolutely. See, the second girl, I was like, see, you could have walked away from the table, because like I said, the second girl,
she's in the scene, she's literally in the socialite scene.
Yeah, yeah, and she wasn't, they weren't romantic.
Right.
It kind of started, but he's like, nah, it was cool. I think she said maybe they kissed once, something, but it was whack. And they became friends. I was like, so you had a whole summer just balling out with this dude.
Right.
Mykonos,
but that's why she trusted him.
But that's also why she should have walked away when he started asking her for bread. I was like, nigga, like, that's, like, I had a great summer. I had a hot girl summer. It was dope.
Right.
Now I ain't got nothing for you, bro. Keep it pushing. But it also, he never showed the girls anything about a home. He was always at a hotel.
He was always on the road.
resorts in the world, and you have a place to live.
And I would always, because I would be like, they ain't diamond mines in all these countries. Like, what are you doing? Why are you going to all these places?
Yo, this is the thing about getting scammed to that level. Is like, it's just so easily, like, you have access and resources. You could literally go hire a PI for 50 right. bucks an hour, and within you can give them a retainer of 500 bucks and know everything about this guy in mm-hmm. no time, right? Like, it is just so not difficult for you to, that's what I'm saying. I think that a lot of times the women that are a part of this sometimes do this subconsciously, right? Yeah, like, they want to believe in this thing more than any logical, you know, anything logical can explain. And so they just part
of it. One of the most interesting twists is that one of the women who prosecuted him, because he had been to jail for this before, mm-hmm. and one of the women who had prosecuted him the first time he went to jail was actually complicit in the shit.
Yeah. Setting up.
I think she literally is his baby's mother. Yeah.
Okay.
She literally is his baby's mother. So the question is, like, how the fuck did that happen? Like, how is that? And why are you, knowing what you went through, why are you, you know, participating with this shit?
Bringing in the next girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's what's crazy. And that's also
that first girl had absolutely no street smarts at all. There's none. No way you're getting me to commit a crime like that, which was like, let me falsify your employment records to get your credit limit raised to 250K. Like, I'm not giving you my social, nigga. Are you crazy?
No,
he gave her his passport,
everything. And all of that. The other crazy, because also I would have been like, if it's that easy for you to lie and say I'm on payroll, why can't you have your company issue you some funds? Like, in real life, you got me on the phone. But the other crazy shit was like, when she called Amex to be like, this is what's been happening, the niggas was like, okay, we coming to your house. I was like, yo, Amex coming to your house.
Word.
We gonna come holler at you. I would have
had then remember, she showed him a picture and they was like, yeah, that's the guy.
That's, you know, that he had been doing this before.
And then at the end, that girl with no street smarts, she was like, yeah, I'm still on Tinder. I'm like, yeah, what are we talking about? I'm on Tinder all the time. I'm like, girl, you know, but and then
never getting married because you owe Amex 250K. This never going down.
And of course,
and I never getting another Amex either. Poor thing.
Amex is like, nah, B.
They'll be good. Like, never again in your life. Amex, you
are getting a Discover card.
Yeah, you good on all this.
Never getting credit again.
I find it very interesting, and I would love to walk through the back end of the process of who approved her at Amex. What compliance happened and occurred?
Apparently, when you just kept in the UK, you person. Just need to be able to have proof of income because they don't have limit. The same credit scoring system in the country. Country to country is so small. Apparently,
even if you. That's my point though, right? Like, but it's either here nor there.
It was weird to me too, because if you had been calling me asking me to increase your limit, you know, 10 times over the past fucking 7 to 10 business days, and then all of a sudden you've given me a new proof of income, I'm flagging the shit. I got questions.
Yeah.
Like, shit.
Yeah. And then of course at the end,
all in the same billing cycle.
He got 15 months in jail. He did 5 months and let him out. And he's doing the same shit that he started doing.
Because they would not consider this a victimless crime.
Exactly.
They would consider
also this because a what he got crime. Pinched on was not it because the thing, Sean, that was genius was that everything
was in his name.
Other women's names. He never, like, they bought the tickets. They brought him cash. Right, like
the credit cards were in their name.
The credit cards were in their names. He got pinched for having a false passport. That's what he got pinched for. It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't no wire fraud. Wasn't no mail fraud. Wasn't no crazy. None of that. So he's smart.
And
it
showed him at the end. And he's right. Back on the PJs. Back driving the Raris. He's balling out again. Balling out again. You know.
Except Tinder finally. I think Tinder must have caught.
Yeah, Tinder.
Doc dropped it. They banned him. So they finally banned him for good.
Yeah, but he'll get around that. Last thing I want to discuss is we didn't get to talk about that because we didn't watch it, but I want to talk about we must talk about Bill Cosby. So the documentary done by W. Kamau Bell about Bill Cosby's career and exploits in raping women with drugs. Very intense documentary.
Thank you for saying it that way, by the way. Raping women with drugs. That is what the nigga did.
That's what he was doing.
People try to sugarcoat it and say, you know, he got in these situations. No, he raped people repeatedly, systematically, with drugs for decades.
And what's wild, many things are wild from the pub, from the outside perspective, that people still, first of all, there's 60 women on the case, but there's way more than that. There's a lot of women who just didn't want to come forward because they didn't want the public ridicule that a lot of the women who came forward got. So there's many, many more women, all races, and black, white.
The burden of proof is on the woman. There's no proof in these cases, really.
So you go to court and you get ripped up by his attorney who tries to digs onto your private life and everything. And what was really wild, though, was for people who are still denying this, it's like this woman who he did this to in like 1967 and the woman he did this to in like 1988. And the stories are exactly the same. He has a method. He's like, yo, I met the dude. He said he was, you know, let's go out or whatever. He said, yo, take this pill. It'll make you feel better. I took the pill because it was Bill Cosby. I didn't know that he was this. And like, this was a playmate, you know, from 1960 something, who sadly had lost her son in a tragic accident. He did this to her. Then there's a woman in like 1980 something. And she's like, yeah, he told me to take a pill. I took the pill because I thought it made me feel better. And I woke up butt naked, not knowing what happened. So these are like, these cases are spanning a long period of time, obviously.
Well, also, what's incredibly...
in different regions of the country and everything.
What's even more sinister to me almost about Cosby is that some of these women are women that he would have had consensual sex with before. And still, at some point,
that's his thing. Yeah. It's almost like his thing to get
power, because rape is about power.
Yeah, he wants to have sex with blackout drunk people. He wants to have sex with people who have no, are unconscious. You know, don't know what's going on. And there's plenty of proof of it throughout the documentary. And, you know, people kind of knew this was Bill Cosby's thing. It's what he did. And they talked about, you know, how mean and nasty he is as a person. And, you know, the people like, you know, he's not Huxtable. You know, he's not that way at all. He's exactly a fucking asshole. Yeah, it was just very interesting. But what did y'all think about the doc?
I haven't watched it yet because I'm not in the frame of mind yet to get into it. I think I'll watch it probably this weekend. But it's I've heard it's very well done. But I also am like, I've not had any problem reconciling these details about Cosby. I think in part because I'm just old enough so that I became familiar, and you guys, especially, maybe not you, Inga, because you're a little bit younger, but I think Jeff and Sean will relate to this. My knowledge of Cosby started before the America's Dad shit, right? Mm-hmm. So I understand if like your intro to Cosby was the Puddin' Pop,
Cliff Huxtable,
Jello, Cliff Huxtable nigga with a sweater vest on and shit. You know, I get that. My introduction to Cosby was first like Fat Albert and Picture Pages, you know, and then
you talk about that. You talk about
and
all
still
that.
Having like, you know, what was the black and white? I Spy on like Nick at Night, right? Mm. I knew of a Bill Cosby who hung out at the Playboy Mansion all the fucking time. Like, I knew those things. I also remember when scandals would come up in real time. Like, I remember, you know, some of the extortion plots. I remember some of the previous rape allegations that were only in the Inquirer, or like one story and then the story just went away. And I remember the fucking Eddie Murphy skit where Bill Cosby tried to sun him and he called Richard Pryor, and Rich was like, tell Bill to have a Coke and a smile and shut the fuck up. You know, like, I remember all of that. But later, a really good friend of mine was friends with his youngest daughter, Evan. And she used to tell me all the time, like, he's a asshole and he hates black people. Like, he's a dick. And
an interesting thing about the doc is, it's the early 70s, I guess, around the Fat Albert time, he actually kind of, I don't know if he went through a militant phase, I don't know if it's the right term, but he did a piece about, you know, a documentary about the history of black people in America. And it's really militant. Mm-hmm. He's talking about slavery and like he's going ham. Like, so people are like, he he actually went to this space where he
that must have been very, very brief, because Cosby was like the white bread black guy.
Yeah, but he, yeah, this was like, I guess, like early 70s. But he did, I guess on YouTube, because I watched it, it's like a PBS piece, and he, like, you know, was really talking about slavery and slavery and what black people went through in this country. And so and then he just flipped into the, you know, to like, I hate niggas type shit. And they talk about all that.
But we do know that he's always had a affinity. He and Camille, you know, have always had an affinity for black arts and culture and history. So that part mm-hmm. isn't that surprising. You know, all of the they're, you know, they're one of the foremost collectors of black, you know, art.
Black art.
Mm-hmm. In the world. And have been,
you know, endowments and music, shit.
You know, arts endowment chairs and all that stuff. So that part isn't so surprising, but he always was like, from at least, you know, the '80s, he's been like the white man's black man. And I think he was, you know, even earlier than that. He was presenting, well, we all know that, like, now when we talk about, like, the what is it, the pound cake speech and shit, the respectability shit, that was all.
Yeah, but they showed it. They showed that when he gave the endowment to Spelman, he spoke at their commencement, and they showed part of the speech, and he's like going at niggas crazy, like, niggas is putting their sperm everywhere, they're not being fathers. It was at the commencement, and then right. if you watch, you see parents kind of being like, "What the fuck is this?"
Like, imagine saying the word sperm in a fucking commencement
at Spelman.
What are you doing?
Nigga, what are you doing? Like, you can see, so you look at, you see some of the parents at Oyen, like, what the fuck? You know, they thought it was gonna be Bill Cosby making some jokes.
Right. Meanwhile, all your kids are mess and all your kids hate you. So there was also that.
Yeah. Bro, what do you think about it?
I thought it was good. I mean, I watched it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up watching a little bit of it again because I started to play it for Mona. Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly what we thought it was. He's a really vile man, just in general. Like, he's just a cantankerous, nasty, and mean-spirited man that has this real desire to sort of be the only one in the room. And I think that his, I'm using air quotes, his exceptional Negro shtick allowed him to really hide under the, you know, under that. Like, he had this predator sort of hiding under acceptable Negro guy.
Yeah.
And he was able to use them sort of interchangeably. And I think it was Jelani Cobb is his name. PhD. He said, you know, some people were like, it's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, when, you know, it was really like, not. It was like, he was just a bad dude. It really wasn't. And that's what I was saying last week. He's not very complex. This isn't a struggle to see a person who has done an enormous amount of good in the world, who has slipped and fallen, and not being able to give them grace. This is a man who has used his platform to be a fucking awful predator. He was repressive. He was like, dude, the fact that fucking Cockroach is off the Cosby Show because he doesn't want to cut a fucking Jerry curl off.
Oh yeah, Martin Payne.
Right? Like that sort of thing is what, you know, really kind of like bugs me out. That's a sort of power trip. And again, like you said, this is probably a number we will never know. I'm sure that there are tons of women that won't, you know, speak about this now. I'm sure that, you know, their grandmothers and things of that nature and don't want to deal with the scrutiny. And that's what's unfortunate about this. And I think his family have long suspected and knew and understood what was going on. I don't think a man can absolutely do this. His wife definitely knew, but I also think immediate family knew. I think children knew. I'd be very hard to press that this shit didn't happen to a friend that was at a sleepover at their house or some weird, you know, some other weird shit he might have done. You know, I just think he's a vile man, and, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not, I'm, you know, again, did he do some, you know, some really good things for Black arts culture? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean he's not a piece of shit person. Like, piece of shit people, exactly. Like a broke clock is right twice a day. Exactly. So you could be an absolute horrible fucking person and a horrible human and still do these other benevolent things. I don't think that it's that cut and dry, but, you know, whatever. I'm fine. I'm not, like, there will be no, you know, sad moments when that runner comes across my screen. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Absolutely. Hey,
did you know about the fake PhD? Did you know about that?
I did not know. I know that there are honorary.
He doesn't actually have his doctorate? He doesn't have an honorary doctorate?
They said he didn't really do the work.
I thought it was an honorary doctorate.
No. It was a PhD. It's a real PhD.
He has honoraries, but he has
from Temple. He has a real PhD. Lowest rung, which is, I guess,
So when you said that meaning he has the PhD, he just had somebody else complete the coursework, or
No, not really. I don't think that was the case. What they were saying was they basically used his real world experience toward the course.
Oh, that's right. Because his thesis was about Fat Albert.
Yes. So they used the real world and the Cosby Show and all of these sort of studied elements that he would, you know, sort of put in there, and how that was impacting Black people and all of those sorts of things. And that helped him sort of get that. And I think that that's why there were several shots from the PhDs on the panel, Todd Boyd, Mark Lamont Hill. They were basically saying, like, yeah, I mean, you got one, but like, it's like when you at the Benz shop, it's like, yeah, you got a Benz, but you got an A class.
You got the C class, you know, it's cool.
Relax.
That's not fraudulent. They do that for people who have served in the military and active duty. Yeah, you can use your real world active duty, especially deployment experience, toward credits, like to the
you
extent
can do that
of,
in
like,
continuing education too degree. For some people.
Yes,
you know that. You have to still be able to apply something too. Like, you still have to like do a thesis I was gonna say
there's also a history and a track record that's being pulled from, right? Well, ultimately, you can't do that if you don't have the resume that speaks to that. And that's what they were saying. They were basically saying, like, he skated through this shit because no one was going to fail Bill Cosby at Temple because they were always waiting for a big check, waiting for an endowment. So go, you know, but basically he bought the degree. You know, do I think he would have passed? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think he's, you know, fuck him. But whatever. I mean, maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't have. But I think that this was also part of, and if you look at the phases, this was part one, right? Part one was America's Dad. He's about education. He's about the righteousness and the right thing and all of that shit. And then phase two came when he went on the Poor Nigga tour and he wanted to tell everybody that they wasn't shit and how you niggas was just not doing anything. And he was not challenged for said. The only person I remember of note that spoke out about how he was behaving during that period was Nikki Giovanni. That was the only person of note that I remember. Mm-hmm. And everyone else kind of, you know, I wouldn't say they agreed, but their silence felt like an agreement.
The cosign, yeah.
You know, and that's what made the entire thing such a fucking joke. It's like, yeah, like the lady said, yeah, my pants are hanging off my ass, but I ain't raped nobody. How about
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was very, very, very and at the beginning, what they also did was, because they covered everything. They talked about how they had Godfrey on there and Chris Spencer. I feel like another comedian as well, maybe. I can't remember. But they talked about how in just in the comedian's world, he's like a god. Like for he, because he was he's one of the most talented comedians ever. And they talked about how when Eddie Murphy dropped, I think it was Raw, and there was Richard Pryor dropped Live and Sunset Strip, I think, and that became a thing of comedians dropping movies. And Bill came out with himself, and they were talking about how, like, for comedians, that was like a masterclass in comedy, like what he did, because it was just a chair and a microphone. And half the time he had the microphone on his lap, and it's like the teams and how he was able to do it, and like his they showed him an iPad, and they're watching his. Chris is like, yeah, you look at the sound effects he's doing right here, and like, and Godfrey's like, this is incredible. This bit about I forget what the bit was, but like they're like legendary bits and stuff. The dentist, when the dentist numbs your mouth, and he's like, they just talk about how as a comedian he's untouchable, but then of course they go into all the other fuck shit. So it's a well done documentary. Like,
for, it's for, very you know, well done.
Yeah, and they don't let nobody off the hook. And yeah, your man did it, and he's out now. And I don't know what he's doing. He was going to tour, right? Wasn't he going to tour like last year? Or something?
Yeah, he was. So I think that was more of a heat check. I don't think that was a realistic thing. Mm. I think that his handle is probably told someone to do a heat check and see what's out there, and we can get that perception that he is being welcomed with open arms, that he was wrong. And yes, he technically was wrong. He was given an immunity deal.
Yeah. And explain that too. Yeah.
They, you know, it explains that because that is what happened.
Yeah.
But yes, in his words, he fucking drugged women for the purposes of having sex with them and raping them. Like, that is just what he did. And I don't
and think admitted for to one it. This second, is the shit I don't get with niggas. The man said he did it. He has said he did it. He just said that him saying he did it couldn't be used to convict him. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even the nigga guy, I wasn't sure I believed it until I saw Beverly Johnson say it. And I'm like,
yeah.
It was we was two, three Chris dozen Spencer. Women was deep that, by was, then. That was Chris Spencer.
Yeah. He was like, I didn't believe nothing. And then when I saw Beverly, because I know her and I know she wouldn't do that. And I was like, wait a minute, it might be something here. But meanwhile, it's been going on for years. Like, so it's just I think he or Godfrey said, you know, hey, it's not, you know, it takes a lot for black people to turn on black people even when we do
shit wrong. It does.
He said it was still Chris Spencer that said that, and I think that mm-hmm. that was to me that was one of the more poignant pieces of the documentary. With him, and I think it was the guy who played Martin in The Cosby Show. He also had a friend that he was not staunch about saying he doesn't believe it, but he was like, he wasn't really sold. He said, you know, he felt like maybe there was some exaggerations or shit didn't quite happen the way they're saying. And then he had a friend break down to him in the car, basically kind of just giving them a blow by blow of what took place. And again, the same story. But I think that it was important to identify and have those two stories back to back, because I think it is telling that we are not identifying and being sympathetic and understanding and believing women until it is someone that we can touch.
Well, you know, there's a willful, there's a level of willful denial, right? Like, and I think we're all kind of guilty of it in some way, where like something happens and you just decide, I'm going to just not even pay attention to it. I'm not going to really listen to it. I'm not going to read into it because I don't want to believe this of this person, right? Mm-hmm. But my thing is, what I don't understand is one thing I know about niggas, like, and abusers specifically, and this is what I really think it is. People don't understand how abusers and rapists, what it means, right? There are people who still believe that rape means somebody yanked, a stranger yanked you
up. You're knocking a girl in the head, yanking her in the alley.
And you had to fight and scream. People still think that when rape is actually much more commonly an associate or someone that you know. And it's way more nuanced than that. Because some people will be like, well, she didn't fight back. that doesn't mean it's not rape. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, so that's the first problem, is like the idea of what rape actually is and means. The second thing is that niggas still don't understand, or people still don't understand, rape is not about sex. It's about power. Because people always go to, why would this person rape when he can get pussy? Because willing pussy is not fun for them. That's not what they get off on. That's not, that's not the shit. It's like, because again, those women who went to his room may have still slept with him. They may have gone with him to his room with the intention of sleeping with him. Like, consensually. He didn't want that. That's the thing.
Go read, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you want to have an understanding of that power dynamic, and what, go read Darren Sharper's tale of rape across several states. And it is, I would not say it was identical to this, but it was very similar.
Right. And people said the same thing about Darren Sharper. You don't need to rape for no pussy.
I was just about to say, this was a young, handsome, wealthy man in his prime, and would have, you know, women would have thrown themselves and had thrown themselves at him. Right. This was so this is why I think it's important for us to sort of identify and understand what any of that shit means. Right. Like, this is not just about sex. This is about power. This is about the circumstances. A lot of this shit is also about kink. I think a big part of their getting off was like a person almost like half dead.
And the last thing is, I think the part of the hard thing to reconcile for people is like, if I'm a fan of this man, if I've looked up to this man, I've idolized this man, and he's capable of this, what does that say about me? Or, you know, if I hear about these things that are rape that I didn't think were rape, but I know that my boys have done it, or I've done it, or I've witnessed it, what does that say about me? And that's the thing that people can't always get past either. So I think that's part of like that willfulness, that willful kind of like, I'm just not going to pay too much.
You're not going to fuck with it.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up on that note. Y'all got anything else? Sure, now you're back now. You got anything else to say?
I feel like I had a shout out, but
I hope that the Hamilton show up with Anthony. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Oh, what when is that?
Tuesday.
I hope music Anthony ain't singing live.
You said you hope they're not.
I hope that he is not singing live. Anthony? Soul Child.
No, oh, music. Yeah, Soul music
Child. Because the recent footage has been rough.
Somebody asked me who I got, and I was like, Anthony. They were like, music got the hits. And I was like, when are y'all going to learn? It's not just, I've never heard anybody not say music is a lazy performer. Like, and Anthony does this shit all day, every day.
All day, every day. Yeah.
And if the Hamilton show up with him, it's a rap.
Yeah. Black History Month down the drain. When I had three sex tapes in a week.
There's so much penis.
The amount, just unconsensual viewing. There's
so much penis on the timeline, and then now we got the baby and his baby mama brother fighting.
Yeah, fighting up the bowling alley, slipping all over the place.
And that big bowling dancing nigga was apparently there before. I don't even know what's going on right now.
Who is writing this season of America? Because y'all are all over the place.
Yeah. God bless. That was probably not the time to decide you wanted to defend your sister's honor, my nigga. But
literally
In the middle of a crowd of bowling alley on the lanes, which is like walkers trying to fight on oil.
This is
crazy. My nigga, oh my god. So on that note, happy Black History Month.
We down bad.
Yeah, we down bad right now. We need to come back.
We got some hope for the second half.
Let us pray.
Rest in peace to Bette Davis.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Queen of Funk. One of Miles Davis's former wives, who lived the last half of her life, like the majority, what, like the last 30 years in reclusion?
She was pretty much a recluse at the end, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very dope, bad chick, bad, like super dope. If y'all, not many people have really heard of her, and if you haven't, please seek out some information. And there's also an episode of Tales from the Tour Bus about her, which is on, which should be on HBO Max, which is worth taking a look at.
Bet, as they say, Betty danced to her own beat, her own drum. Or yeah, as niggas say, Betty gonna be Betty. Now that's all I'm saying. Now you know Betty. Betty gonna be Betty. She's gonna do what she's gonna do.
Okay, you know, I remember Betty. I remember my shout out. It's shout out to, because I haven't had time to like watch a bunch of TV lately, but there is a podcast that's been keeping me super entertained, and that is Black Girl Songbook with Danielle Smith.
Oh, Danielle Smith, yeah.
It's so good, and she breaks down like a different Black girl iconic song in every episode, and the interviews she's getting are absolutely incredible. I just listened to the episode of she did on Rihanna, and she got Cucurell to talk about the production of, or the conception of Umbrella. Which is a great song, and like the detail he goes into about how that song even happened had me enthralled. Like I was just sitting in the driveway, like holy shit, I don't want to turn this off. So
yeah, I don't know if I know the history. I mean, I know, you know, Tricky and Dream did it, and that was supposed to be for somebody else.
Yeah, they go into like how many different people they had sent the song to,
passed on it. Yeah, but yeah. I mean wasn't it supposed to be for
Christina Milian?
It was Britney. First.
It was Britney. Oh, it was Britney Spears. That's right. Mm-hmm. It was Britney Spears.
Replay was supposed to be Christina Milian.
That makes sense. But yeah, Britney, Umbrella Britney. But that, just for the kids in the music, you're gonna try to get in, like if you're writing songs or whatnot, and then and you know people are passing, like honestly, don't get discouraged because the stories are endless of people who passed on hits. And like later on, we're picked up by somebody else, and the records, you know, take off or whatever. So like, just keep doing your thing because, you know, just because like in this case, just because Britney passed, you know, Dreamin' could have been like, man, fuck it, you know.
But then it literally reinvented her career. So
yeah, absolutely. That's actually the demarcation line from the kind of
pop, straight to the pop lane.
The poppy, Caribbean poppy islandy kind of music to the edgy avant-garde shit that she did from then on. And Umbrella was literally the line to go to cake and you know, all that other shit that she did. I'm gonna check that out though. That sounds interesting. That's it. We'll see y'all next week.
Later. Bye.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.